Prepare to be captivated by the business story of the week, hosted by me, Shaheen Shan. Join us on a journey through the twists and turns of entrepreneurial triumphs and setbacks. Immerse yourself in the narrative and witness the magic that turns dreams into reality. This is Business Story of the Week.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Business Story of the Week. I am your co-host, Joshua. And today we are going to traverse many lanes. That's what we're going to do today. We have ourselves a guest here who's going to guide us on all these multiple lanes, because stay in your lane is a phrase used to dissuade people from straying from their area of expertise, right? But when it comes to Professor Eddie Obeng, Eddie travels many lanes at the same time. He is an author of 10 books, including 2 Financial Times bestsellers. He is a digital pioneer who created Cube, described by The Wall Street Journal as the most human-centered virtual campus for teaching global executives. I don't think I've ever heard of that concept whatsoever. In the early 1990s, he founded the first virtual business school, Pentacle. He re-energized design, project management, a list that is too long to continue. His education in engineering, biotechnology, and economics make it easy for him to make sense of today's complexity and see simple ways through. If that doesn't make him cool enough already, when traveling to client, Eddie works. He flies his own helicopter. Eddie, we need to get into this right now. Talk to us. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, delighted to be here, Joshua. Fantastic. Thanks for inviting me.
That is fantastic. I mean, with that story right there, we can start with the helicopter, but I always started with this way. You know, I started from the journey of, you know, founding the first virtual business school to being the first keynote speaker, your multiple educational background. But Eddie, where did it all begin? In your childhood, anything, any pivotal moments, any experiences throughout your life that, you know, turned, that led you to these crossroads and to you now driving your own helicopter today?
Yeah, sure. My dad died when I was about 4 months old. So I was brought up by my mom, who was a hardworking person. And so that gave me lots of time to play and to do things. So when I was much younger, I was interested in electronics. I had an electronics set for building circuits, and I had science kits, and I did all sorts of building of stuff. I built a go-kart and stuff like that. But I always wanted to do something practical. I wanted to do engineering. I wanted to make stuff. It's genetic. I think I'm one of those weird people who don't, I'm an iconoclast. So, you know, if you have a tribe and you have 100 people in the tribe and they all go eating the strange yellow and purple berries, they'll all die. But there's one guy who goes and tries the berries, okay?
Yeah.
If he dies, who cares? But if he survives, then you carry on, okay? So I think I'm that guy. So I sort of always wanted to do engineering. So I started studying towards that. And then as I grew a bit older, I realized I wanted to broaden what I did. And then I started working in engineering, and I discovered you don't make any money. So I started learning things like economics and figure out how you could start a business. I decided I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So that's sort of my background, how I got here.
Wow, Eddie. First of all, I failed to ask this. Where are you from originally? And did you really eat those berries?
No, I didn't. Well, I probably did, but I'm still here, so it's okay. So when you say where you're from originally, it's a tough one for me, because I was born in a country called Ghana in West Africa, I was born in the middle of Ghana. And my people, the people who speak the language, which I was brought, they actually are from South Sudan. They walked across Africa 1,000 years ago. So when you say where you're from originally, I can go back 1,000 years, and then, sorry, you just have to guess after that.
Well, yeah, it's just, your guess is as good as mine, basically.
Exactly. I can tell you 1,000, but when you get to like 1,001, I can't tell you anymore.
Wow. Well, you've always been as curious, you know, as far back as your ancestry, perhaps. And now here you are today telling us your curiosity has led you to this career of yours in the realm of like innovating, digital innovation, leadership development, and all that. Now, today, Eddie, I want to talk about your cube. You know, people need to find out a bit about this more. And I'm quite interested myself because I went to your website and it's like a game. It's like a
Yeah.
right. It's like a virtual world, a cube game. It's like metaverse before there was metaverse, right?
Yeah,
And again, the Wall
exactly.
Street Journal called this the most human-centered virtual campus for teaching global executives. So
Yeah.
basically, they go into this kind of virtual world, this virtual game, and they are taught how to be global executives. How does that work? How does that work, Eddie? Tell
Yeah.
us about that.
So, yeah, so I'll tell you how I got there. Basically, what happened was I was teaching in a normal business school, a place called Ashridge Business School. It was quite obvious the world was changing, was globalizing. The other thing also I was trying to get them to do in a business school was to add the application of what people learn to the learning. You know, you go to a business school, they teach you business cases, they teach you stuff, and then you're on your own. But I realized that with the world getting faster and more complex, it was probably quite, I'm going to change my background. Oh, by the way, the books there, they were just to impress you because everyone else has a library, but I don't have that many books. So I just put 10 books there. Because
Hey,
they're all
those are
mine.
the 10 books.
So yeah, so just stepping to the side. So one of the models I came up with early was I could see the world was changing much faster than we could learn. Traditionally, we've been able to learn faster. So when you learn something, if you don't put it into practice, basically it's gone. You lost the opportunity.
Yes, of course.
So I was trying to get to a way to help people learn, executives learn, and put it into practice, learn, put it in practice, etc. And so that's why I stumbled onto the idea of doing it virtually. That's where it came from. It was a real need. And we still have that need today, especially even more today, because people are working from home, they're distributed. So how do you bring them together to learn something, to find a new way of working, to build a new culture? Everyone's still doing everything the same way as they were doing it before the pandemic. You know,
Precisely.
they learn nothing, they've learned different ways of work. Okay, so that's how I got into Cube. And then the question is, how do you build something which allows people to learn and work together as if they were face to face and probably more comfortably?
Yes,
That
of
was the
course.
challenge. That was the hard part.
So now being now exactly. So now you've come to you went into business school and now you're thinking like, okay, how do we get people to get grasp this concept a lot
Correct.
faster, you know,
Correct.
a lot quicker, but retain it as well at the same time? And you thought
Exactly.
of this virtual world.
A virtual way of doing it. So the thing which brought it to life to me, and the reason I realized it would work as an education thing, was I was in teaching a course one miles up in Nottingham, miles up north. And at the end of the day, I had like 2 days, so I had nothing to do. So I went into the town and they had like a little emporium where they had VR machines. Okay. And it was like a little tree trunk and you stood in and put the headset on, some gloves, and there was a little
Okay.
treadmill.
What
And
years is Eddie?
This is like
Wait.
1990 something.
Oh
So
wow,
early 90s.
you're way
Okay.
ahead of your time.
So I went in, I paid my $5, you know, they gave me the headset for 5 minutes or whatever it is. I put the headset on and I was in a game. And I had like a sword and we had to go to, and I could hear the other players. Okay.
Yes, of course.
And it was fun, 5 minutes. But I'll tell you what changed my life was not going into the game, it was taking the headset off. Because I suddenly realized that I had been in the game.
Okay.
And I realized that if you could create that type of environment where people really got totally immersed and they were doing something, then they could learn without all the normal worries about how do I look and who's here and all the rest of it.
Yes.
They'll be able to retain it because it's visual as well as auditory, as well as they're doing something. So the retention will be better. And at the same time as you did that, they will experiment because it's not the real world. So they can try things
Exactly.
out like I did. So the
Exactly.
question was, how do you create that in order to let people learn and executives be able to change? And so that was what drove the whole process of now, how do you create this? How do you make this happen? And how do you make it human, not just a game where, or not just technical, if that makes sense.
And that's very important too, because when you gamify it in the sense of like, it opens up people to experiment, right? I'm not
Right,
fe I don't fear
exactly.
of making mistakes, making errors. In
Exactly.
fact, you know, I could just experiment, test everything. But now the challenge is, how do you retain that better? How can you
Correct.
introduce more technicalities into it so that the lessons are more relevant in the business world? Talk to us a
Yeah,
bit about that.
exactly. So fortunately, I was teaching. So this model behind me was really useful because I was teaching in business school. And when the world changes much slower than you can learn. If you're doing strategy, you can work out your strategy, then you can roll it out over 5 years and you can make money. If you're doing, I don't know, leadership, if the world's changing slower than you can learn, then you can use your past experience, okay? If you're running an organization, you can build a hierarchy so the boss tells everyone else what to do. That's the old world. Bad news, we're sitting in the new world. None of that works anymore. You know, you have to apply your strategy as you're doing it. You have to lead people when you don't know where you're going. You have to be able to plan and execute very fast, learn and apply, you know, diagnose a problem. So in the new world, which we live in, all the teaching and the case studies from the old world stop working. I mean, people still teach them. I mean, even today, you hear people do strategy workshops and say, let's do a, an analysis of our environmental strategy. By the way, AI just wiped you out last month. You know, so they're still teaching this stuff. But what I did was I set myself a goal. I said, this is what we teach a typical MDA. We have to teach them about leadership and teams and organization and so on. If you were designing for the new world, what would you do? So the first thing I realized was I needed to teach different stuff. So for example, when you're teaching planning, traditionally you say, so break it all down and then make the plan. No, no. If you're teaching planning in the new world, you go, let's pretend you succeeded. How do you feel? I feel great. Okay. So you succeeded. Now look back into the past. What things must you have done? Well, I must have done this. I must have done that. So you almost plan in reverse. I call it sticky steps. So one of my methods. Sticky steps. Okay. And I've told you how to do it. And I have a framework. I probably don't have it to hand where I can teach people within 3 or 4 minutes how to plan when they have no clue what's going on and make a plan.
Yes.
And they can do that within a cycle of 15 minutes. I can teach them how to go into a situation where they need a business case, but they don't even understand the problem. And together, collaboratively, they can create a business case for a complex problem within 15 minutes. So the other thing I realized was when you're teaching in this world, everything must be learned and applied within a small cycle. And what you're teaching people and getting them to apply is different. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So the first thing was, what on earth are you going to teach these people? Don't just teach them the old stuff. Teach them something different.
Of course. That's
number two is, how are they going to be together? You know, everyone knows how to behave in a normal, you know, a normal business course. You go, I'm important. Look at me. I'm important. There's a tutor there. Look at my slides. Blah, 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 PowerPoint. Okay. So everybody knows how to behave. And we know that behavior is great, but it's not dynamic enough for the world we want.
Yes.
So I have to think about what's a culture that you could create and put into a virtual room. Remember, it's immersive.
Yes.
People have three-dimensional headsets because the sound is three-dimensional. So you feel you're there. You forget that you're not there. But what's the culture you should have? Laughter, fun, challenge, lots of small groups. They have to be able to break out really quickly and come back together. You have to be able to overhear each other. So on Cube, if there's a group of people, when you go to a table and you sit down, if I can find your picture, I will later, the sound closes around your table, but you can still hear the people on the other table.
Right.
Because you want that buzz. But at the same time, when you stand up to go back together, instantly you're together. So it's not like Zoom where you say, go into your different Zoom rooms. You're actually all in the same room. You can see the people, just like real life. Now, but also you put other cultural things in there, like we're working across languages, across the world. So when people come together, we have cultural things like right before you talk. So if we're going to do something, everybody writes a sticky, puts it on the whiteboard. So if I say, what are your objectives? We all put them up, then we discuss.
Okay, okay.
Does that make sense? So you build a culture.
Yes.
So you got tools. You need a human culture, which will work for people. And then the last part is the technology and the functionality. Because the only reason that you need the type of functionality is to support people doing the work using the tools and being human beings in the culture.
Wow.
It's the opposite way to how most people think about metaverse.
Exactly, exactly. And it's like you really created that environment, that virtual world for everyone to make it not so just so you're learning online, but you're also experiencing the dynamics behind a business school, basically.
Right? Exactly.
So now tell us why this is hailed as a revolutionary platform when it comes to that new world
thinking. So let me just show you some things. So this is a typical campus. Okay, so we have a campus and we put on the campus the rooms we think people need. So for example, that's a simulation room where people can run computer simulation so they can work together on a computer simulation of a a problem or a project or a strategy. That's
Wow.
The office where my tutors are. That's offices. So you can have an office, like a work office, with your colleagues when you're on the course, because after all, you're swapping between the two different worlds. There are a couple of project cubicles and things in the middle. Let's see if I find a picture which is a bit more. Yeah, there you go. So you get some sort of sense. There's a
there
big cafe.
You go.
So people can meet in the cafe, you know, and you can have exhibitions and things. So the spaces are there for the functionality to support use of the tools and the methods and the work and to support the culture. So, for example, the cafe is important because people get together and they hang out.
Yes, of course.
And in the culture, we have things like coffee on cube. So maybe as a team, every day you meet at, I don't know, twice, 10 in the morning, 5 in the evening, if you're global, people come together and have a cup of coffee together and chat. You know, and they're literally in the same place. So that's the sort of thing which makes a difference. There are other things as well. I mean, everybody goes on these days about, you know, we've got to be more inclusive and all that stuff, which is great, but you can't, it's not possible. I mean, I know they claim you can be more inclusive and more diverse, but you can't see diversity. That's the problem. Because you, until we started speaking, you didn't know I was one of the people who ate the purple and yellow fruit. You know, you can't see diversity. You literally can't. But what you want people to do, and we learned this early, is stop making assumptions. So when we started, we experimented with different avatars, and the avatars would, for example, have shapes, or we could put pictures on them. And what we learned quite quickly is, if you're interacting virtually and you come across an avatar who looks like your old geography teacher you hated, all the emotions from that come onto this person.
Of course.
So the avatars we use are very, very simple avatars. They're square. Can you see the square heads? Square head, body, legs. You don't need anything else, because normally you're not looking at each other. You're looking at the work.
Yes, of course.
Looking at the work 90% of the time.
Wow.
This image behind me is, we're teaching some soft skills, like I think it's negotiating. So people have put their webcams on, and the webcam comes on where your head is. But as a general rule, we don't use webcams. All you get is the person's name above their head and their voice.
Yep.
So so you don't get the, I shouldn't talk to this person. They look old or they look senior. Or none of that happens, because you just take people at face value.
Yes,
so
of course.
That helps the culture as well, because it helps people to meld together. It helps us to laugh together, you know, and so on. So that's another element. Go and ask me something. You're going to ask me something.
Yeah, no, this is great. It's because I'm really getting immersed into this right now. First of all, it really is like metaverse before there was anything metaverse at all.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to let our audiences know right now. First of all, what year did you set this up, and how many users are we having right now, or how many companies have you worked with?
So we started in 2000. I started the very first version of this in 96, which we built ourselves, called Columbus. And it was it was pretty bad.
Well, we all got to start somewhere.
And then 2008, 2009, we came across, when I say we, it's myself and a couple of colleagues, David Lomas and people like that, we came across a language called Smalltalk and a platform called Quack. And so we started working with that as a platform, but the idea always was, we knew what we were going to do. The objective is important. One of the reasons all these metaverse things fail is because they haven't got an objective. It's just go in and play and do stuff. No, we're going to teach people. I'm going to make sure they apply the stuff. Therefore, they have to be able to show each other spreadsheets. Therefore, they have to be able to, the materials must be accessible. Therefore, they must be able to laugh together. So we knew what we were trying to do, both culturally. So we could then build the software to support the activity. The other thing we did early on was, we moved away from headsets. Because we realized that when people wear headsets, they throw up.
That's true. That is true. I experienced that myself. I was like, how do you make this common to the people, to the market? Everyone's going to be nauseous.
Yeah, so they all throw up. Okay. And the other thing is, once you put the headsets on, you don't have your hands.
Right.
So if you think about what you're doing now, you're recording, you're looking at me, you're looking at documents, you're moving bits of paper in order for us to have this conversation. Once you put a headset on, all that's gone. So, but we know how executives work. They're looking at one thing, they're looking at their phones, they're talking about stuff. So we use flat screens. And then we realized that if you make the sound three-dimensional, your brain doesn't realize that you're not in a three-dimensional space, because the voice from here on the screen is also the avatar, the cubot, who's to that side. So that's basically how we got it. Over the years, we've worked with hundreds of companies. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. It's I don't know where we should start. I mean,
So
we
tell me
do.
what. Tell me
Sorry?
one particular. Tell me one particular story of a
Well, I'll
prominent
use this one here.
company.
This is a company called
Yes.
Deloitte. It's one of the biggest accounting firms in the world. We run a
Deloitte.
1-year program for one of their divisions for youngsters who are going to go on and drive change. It's a big change leadership project management course. Okay, it
Okay.
runs over a whole year. They learn, they put it into practice. They are on cue to do workshops every 2 weeks. The workshops are 3 hours long. We do everything from negotiating to listening to planning to
Right,
how
right.
everything, what you would normally do face to face. And so that's a classic example. But also for Deloitte, we've also done things like workshops. At the end of this course, we have a big graduation, and we have that. I don't know whether I've got a picture or not. We have that in an enormous auditorium where people
Wow.
can come, and their bosses can come, and so on. So that would be one. We did tons with people like Asahi, who make the beer, the health service in the UK, Fujitsu, the list goes on. I mean, we've done all sorts of projects, from teaching projects to transformation projects to culture shift projects to just simple workshops. Because guess
Any,
what? Why not?
well, of course, why not, right? You've got everything there virtually, everything you could offer, anything that they could offer that they wanted. You guys can customize that virtually.
Yeah,
Any
because we know how to
tests?
deliver the learning, and this tool is
Precisely.
just to enable it. Yeah.
Exactly. The tool is just there to enable it. Any testimonials at all that came from these companies, of course, from your experience as well, where you've seen massive differences of taking this virtual route of learning as opposed to a traditional route of MBA schooling. Anything that
Yeah.
came
So
across?
first of all, I mean, so first of all, remember the entire content we teach is assuming you're in the new world. So it's
Yes, of
going to be
course.
different from an MBA. The second is some of the philosophy, like this 15-minute cycle.
Yes.
Okay. And around that, we have these things, we call them PETs, people engagement tools, performance engagement tools. So, for example, if we were starting this as a meeting, I would start with what's known as the hopes and fears PET. So I say to you, okay, Joshua, anything you specifically want to get out of this? What's your biggest
Right.
hope for the session? What's your biggest fear? And if we were on Cube, we'd be in front of a whiteboard. Okay. And on the whiteboard, we would put our stickies up of what our hopes and fears are. Okay. So I've just got
Wow.
a video behind me just so you can see. There'll be some people. There you go. Each one of those is a cue box, is a person. Okay. And they're in the room. Here you go, hopes and fears. So now they're putting all their stickies up. So they do it in parallel. So it's very fast and productive, and everyone can read what's going on. You got it.
Wow.
So
Wow.
that's a tool. So you see, they're putting them all up. Somebody will sort them out, make an agenda. They'll agree to what they're going to do. So it's very fast. If you were in face to face, each person talks for a minute, everyone's bored. You got it?
Done.
So it's highly
Done.
productive. Everything's there. If you've forgotten, you can come back because it's in the room. So this is
Wow.
where things like the culture of right first, talk second are really helpful. And we've got like 400 of these tools, for
Wow.
everything from, engaging people, making them laugh, working out who the boss is, how to recruit people. We've got hundreds of these things, how to put together a business case, and so on and so forth.
Wow.
So when you come together, it's very effective. After a few sessions, people know the tools. So even if they're not learned, if they learn the tools, they want to put them into practice, they can do it. And because they've got their offices, they can bring their staff from real life, and they can work with the staff from real life on anything. So that's what the difference is between a sort of traditional MBA, where you go and you do 3 years and you pay hundreds of thousands of pounds and stuff like that, and what we do.
That's fantastic. That is a good. I'm still in that question because I want to ask like a particular company that saw massive changes after taking this kind of route. Anything else that stands out to you?
So I mean, there's lots of quotes. There's tons of quotes. So I mean, we did like there's a company called Wolters Kluwer. It's a German company, and they wanted to transform their HR operations, and they had a project planned, which is going to take months and months and months. I think it was 6 months.
Wow.
And we said, we'll teach you how to reorganize. So we'll teach you like organization, new world organization, and then you do
Right.
the project, implement it, and then we see how it goes. They had planned for 6 months worth of work. We did it in 6 weeks. They reorganized their
Wow.
whole thing. That's the sort of difference. With the health service in the UK, we had a situation where A lot of people used to get certain diseases to do, it's called UTIs. And the doctors, of course, they're all busy, so they can't get together and plan. So we put them on Cube so they could then connect from anywhere. And then we brought them together. And this project had been going on in the health service for about 2 years. And within one, two, three, four get-togethers over the course of 2 weeks, they had a national framework, a national protocol, and they rolled it out. So the scale of what you can do is just phenomenal.
It is.
Yeah, it really is. But I'm just trying to think of other examples. When the pandemic happened, we had Fujitsu, and Fujitsu used to have these design studios around the world where people would physically go in and they design thinking. So we built them an equivalent on Cube. I don't know if I've got a copy of it here, but they said, this is the room we use. No, I don't have it. This is the room we use. Can you recreate it? And so we said, yeah, we'll recreate it. But we knew it wouldn't work because we know Cube is different because things are faster and you're working in a different culture. So we built it and they said, oh, this is not what we wanted because it doesn't work the same. We said, okay, let's do it the way we want to do it.
Exactly. It's all different.
So we did it the way we wanted to do it. And they were able to run their design thinking workshops around the globe at about six times the rate they were doing before when they were doing it with people going around. So, I mean, the list of projects just goes on and on and on and on. But I mean, we've been doing it for a long time as well. So, of course, a lot of projects.
Yeah, so you mentioned 2008, 2009, when you started really getting into this.
Yeah, so 2008, 2009, we started building. We didn't know what we were doing. We went sort of live about 2011. We had this conference called, I've forgotten what it was, an innovation conference, because we wanted to get early adopters in. And we ran it, and it mostly worked. The technology crashed in some bits. It doesn't matter. Anyway, everyone talked about it, but then no sales. So we went. So we did a change conference, and got people interested, and they came. And technology worked a bit better, but we hadn't fully optimized the culture and the tools properly. So we got a few sales from that, and then we started building. And 2014. We emptied our own offices because we all used to be in the same physical office, and we emptied our office and all the people went wherever, and we just started to actually run our business on there. And that's when we got the real breakthrough, because suddenly you're doing it to yourself, you're drinking your own champagne. Exactly. So you go, oh, that's really rubbish, we've got to change that. That's really amazing. So really, it's the past 10 years that we've really seen the opportunity to deliver all these projects. And it's still there. I mean, the biggest headaches we have are people not being able to understand what we're suggesting. Because when you say, I think it's going to be a webinar.
Of course.
It's such a problem. Or if you say, no, it's real VR, then they think they have to buy everyone headsets for $3,000 a piece.
Goodness.
That's another problem.
Is it easier to explain now because of Metaverse?
No, it's harder. It's harder because our marketing budget is like that, and everyone else's marketing budget is like that because they're all startups. What's it? Zuckerberg spent $13.4 billion. You can't compete with that. Everyone thinks Metaverse. Where are my goggles? Exactly. No, you don't need goggles. You won't throw up. So, So, and then the other challenge we have is the IT people in company. They don't understand it. Because it's not a website, it's not an app.
It's not a game.
Correct. So either we get approval to go through their firewalls and stuff straight away because the guy gets it, or they just waste our time for like a month.
Oh, goodness.
So there's some interesting things. Anyway.
Eddie, as much as I would love to keep you, I love your enthusiasm. I love your energy. I love what you talk about here on Cube. I want to get more into it. But, you know, we have ourselves, of course, we have ourselves your information that we're going to plug towards the end of this. But before we truly wrap this up, I want to ask you, what does the future look like for Eddie Obeng? What are your future aspirations? And how do you see Cube shaping the future further and further? And do you think this will be a more, to me, it seems like a more viable options other than Metaverse goggles, you know? But I hope we do get it out there a little bit more. But how do you see the future, say, shaping up?
Yeah, so I'll do around Cube first, and I'll tell you about what my aspirations are. So Cube is really, it's a campus which enables us to do magical things. Right. You can work faster. So that's the thing. So that bit just it's getting more people, more scale. The other thing we've done also is we've got a new version, which is like Cube Lite, which is not an install. You can just get to on your phone. But phones are small, so you don't get the experience. You know, tablet better, but it's it because it's browser based. It's not persistent. So if you go, whereas with normal Cube, the room is on your machine, so you can go to a physical meeting, take your laptop, and five of you can be working in a room on Cube whilst you're sitting together, which is just fabulous because the room stays there. Do you see what I mean? So we've got a new product because people say, "Oh, I can't do all this." So that's a great thing. So that launches mid-April. So that's going to be quite. We'll get different types of people. We think we'll get small businesses and other people coming on there. Really, it's about the culture, getting people to understand the culture you need in the new world. So that's the real story. And then the tools. We have all these tools which make everything fast. So we're pushing and we're trying to tell people about how to do that. They're all excited about AI. They don't know what it is, but we're trying to help them realize that by working on Cube, you can be more productive than if you were pretending to use AI and ChatGPT. So that's that one. For me but personally, I keep eating the berries. I keep eating the funny colored berries. And when I look at the business world, I realize that it's sort of broken because capitalism isn't working anymore very well because there are too many big companies, not enough small ones. So I want to help the small companies and I want to poke the big companies to try and open up. If I step outside the business world to the global world, you see the same consolidation of power. So most countries are struggling even with their democracies. And so it's the same problem. It's literally the same problem at different levels. And so the question is, how do you empower people, maybe using my tools, to have better conversations, to be able to really balance the power a bit more? So that's really where I'm focusing my personal efforts. But I continue to push Cube, I continue to push Pentacle, I continue to teach and stuff. I do keynotes around the world still, which is great, because I love keynotes, I'm pretty good at them. I'm humble. I was going to say, it's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am. Oh, no, I'm joking.
We'll cut that out.
So I'm still doing that. But I think the bigger challenge is how on earth we build that culture of autonomy, freedom, creativity, ability to collaborate without always fighting. You see how divisive people are these days. They have an opinion and they get... all those elements which are central to Cube culture, I want to try and bring them to the rest of the world and say, look, you don't have to behave this way. Open your minds. This is how you do it. This is how you deal with these things and so on and so forth. So that's what I'm trying to do mostly.
That is a fantastic way to put it all together. And the way that you are actually pushing this, I hope people get to know it more. I am very fascinated. I am certain our audience and listeners are fascinated as well. One last plug. Eddie, where can we find you? Where are you most active at? LinkedIn, Instagram, and how can we find out more about Cube?
Yeah, so if the best place to connect to me is LinkedIn. So it's just Eddie Obeng. Is it Prof Eddie? Anyway, you'll find me. Eddie Obeng, LinkedIn. I do a lot of posts and a lot of thought stuff in there. That's a great place to find me. If you want more about Cube, then to track down Cube, it's cube.cc. That's Q as in Quebec, Uniform, Bravo, Echo.cc, Charlie. That's the web address. Go in there, register. Somebody will respond to you. They'll invite you in. If you say you came from this podcast, I'll meet you on Cube. How about that? Okay, that would be cool. We can high five with our avatars who don't have any hands. It's a podcaster. Yay. Okay. So Cube.cc and register there. Otherwise, if you want to get me through LinkedIn, you can email me as well. And I've got a website, which is eddieobeng.com as well. So there are multiple ways of getting me. And even if you just Google Eddie Obeng, I'll probably come up anyway.
There's probably the only one Eddie Obeng talking about Cube anyway in the world. And with the same energy and enthusiasm. Eddie, thank you so much for everything. Thank you so much for today. Thank you for being on the show. I love the energy. I love the enthusiasm. And, you know, we'll stay connected with you.
Thank you very much, Joshua. Thanks for inviting me.
Good luck with the podcast.
Thanks. Bye.
For our audience and listeners out there, see you in the next one.
All right. So here's the thing. We try to get a little bit better every day, but we can't do it without you. So if you like the video, make sure to like and subscribe below. And if you have any comments, just leave them in the space under.